Hello, I'm Robin Beck. Welcome to Auntie in the Pause, the podcast that we're going to talk about perimenopause, menopause, and all the twists and turns and the what the heck is going on moments along the way.
Hello, I'm Sarah Peterson, and we're the co-founders of Auntie. We've got a brand that's dedicated to helping women navigate perimenopause with real health solutions, honest conversations, and of course, some truth bombs.
Because let's be honest, if we don't talk about these changes that are happening right now in us, then and laugh about it, we might just go crazy.
And each episode, we bring in experts. We're going to share our own experiences and answer any questions that nobody is talking about.
Right? From hormone shifts to family chaos and what goes into products that we use. So please hit the follow and share and let's get started.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be intended to replace professional medical advice. The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the hosts and guests. We discuss topics that are subject to change due to ongoing research and new discoveries. Always consult current sources. Listener discretion is advised. This episode contains explicit content and language and may not be suitable for audiences.
All right. This is going to be an amazing episode. We are going to focus on helping you guys find that right provider instead of just being told, just suck it up. It's the way of life. That's such a common experience, and this conversation today will be so empowering. I want to ask you ladies out there, do you ever feel like when you go to the doctor and you ask about perimenopause or menopause that you may know more than your doctor does? Well, you're not alone. And so today we're going to talk about the knowledge gap in perimenopause care and why self-advocacy is so important.
We are so excited to introduce you guys to Dr. Waymire. She is a board-certified family physician and founder of Dragonfly Menopause Care. She is dedicating herself to learning about the latest advancements in menopause treatment and is certified through the North American Menopause Society.
She is absolutely amazing. You guys are going to love her. Dr. Waymire is all up to date. She's compassionate. She's tailoring it to your unique menopause journey. She's on a mission to help women feel confident, informed, and ready to take on that next chapter. And man, does she have amazing information to share today.
I'm really excited about this conversation. Let's get started. Dr. Waymire, welcome to Auntie and the Pause.
All right. Well, welcome to Dr. Waymire on today's episode. So Dr. Waymire, we're excited to have you here today. And I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about your journey and your path to establishing the Dragonfly Menopause Care, and what inspired you to focus on menopause and what took you on this journey?
It was an unexpected journey. I had been in family practice. I'm board certified in family medicine. Went into practice in 2009, so spent 8 years out in Glencoe, Minnesota, doing hospital, clinic, ER, nursing home care, and then just burned out and switched to just ER alone. And now I work for a local hospital system. I loved that. But then in 2024, started experiencing symptoms that I realized were, well, hot flashes were pretty obvious. So I became a patient and I didn't know what to do. So I reached out to a lot of doctors that I know through, you know, Facebook groups and community, and got a lot of advice that was not the advice that I would give myself now, knowing what I know. Ultimately, long story short, someone referred me to Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and so I'd never heard of her before. And I listened to an interview she did, and I remember it so vividly, sitting in my kitchen or my dining room at the table, and my mind was literally blown. I just couldn't believe what I was hearing, because I was trained. I graduated medical school in 2005, which was 3 years after the Women's Health Initiative came out. So I knew my understanding of menopause, having even been out of family medicine for 7 years, 6 years at that time, was that hormones are bad, they cause breast cancer. Lowest dose of hormones for the least amount of time is the only way to treat menopause. Avoid them if at all costs. And I put a lot of patients back in my family medicine days on antidepressants and gabapentin for their hot flashes and things. And that was really the only symptom that mattered. We didn't pay attention to any other symptoms. So essentially, once I listened to Dr. Mary Claire Haver, I realized, oh my goodness, this is a totally new world. What is going on? And I thought, well, I want a doctor like Dr. Mary Claire Haber. I want to go find one. So I really struggled to find one. And who I found is good. She's pretty darn good, but she, you know, doesn't quite go the whole distance to say, you know, cautiously she's wonderful, but I wouldn't treat me quite the same way. And long story short, I got in there. I actually got on basic hormone replacement therapy or menopause hormone therapy, however you want to call it. HRT is easier. And I started to feel better. I started to learn more things. And I realized, well, I want to go on testosterone. Is that an option? And it's really not an option, but not with this doctor in particular, it doesn't seem. But point is, it took me months to get into even that doctor who is pretty up to date. And I realized, well, geez, this is a problem. I can't get into a doctor and I have connections. What are other women in Minnesota doing? So I just a light bulb moment about last summer. I decided to go through the North American Menopause Society training, became certified in menopause. And when I started to do that, that was sort of a commitment. I think I started studying in August, took my test in October. And as I was studying, my husband and I found a place for me to have a clinic here in this little My Salon in Chanhassen, Minnesota, and set up this clinic and literally opened my doors November 4th, about 3 months after realizing I wanted to even do this in the first place.
Amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Fun. My training was not just the North American Menopause Society, which was, by the way, very hard and very excellent. I also trained through some other menopause specialists around the country and took some extra courses for just what are they actually doing out in practice today. And that has really been helpful to take it a step beyond just the basic certification. So I also sought training out to be a competent in treating breast cancer survivors, which is a really touchy subject, but also a really important group of women. And I had to go through a lot to get through that because I feel like if all women are neglected, they're especially neglected. So I want to be able to take care of any woman with any history, with any menopause symptoms. It's just so many women out there and it's been really fun.
My gosh.
I love that you like knew the kind of doctor that you wanted and needed and you decided, you know what? I'm just going to become that doctor. Like, who does that? That's so dang cool.
Yes.
I expected it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I surprised myself.
Right? And I love that you know, as a doctor, you had to step back and be like, oh my gosh, here's what I did to women and now I'm here and there's nothing for us, right? And I think that is exactly how Auntie came about too in transparency. And that's how I found about you is I was going to my doctor and I had all these symptoms and I was only, you know, 42 years old, but I had all this and it was like, okay, is it stress? Is it, you know, is it perimenopause? And I was like, she said perimenopause. And I'm like, what? No, no way. And she goes, well, we need to, you know, do all these things. And same thing she said, she goes, she's about my age. We are not trained on this. You know, we are not trained on this. So we're kind of going through this journey together, Robin. And that's actually how I met you, Dr. Waymire, is when we finally realized, yep, it's perimenopause. And I started Auntie and she's like, you need to talk to her. Like she is changing it. And I was so excited that we met because everything you say, and even when we sat down and talked, it's like women, you go to your doctor and you're just kind of, you feel like you almost know more about it because you've been researching and figuring it out. And there hasn't been anything and your mothers won't talk about it.
Well, they never got treatment. You just ignore, you just power through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's sad how many of my friends are already saying, well, Robin, it's just a way of life. Just power through. And I mean, I can't say enough, like, no, go to your doctor, talk about HRT. Cause like it is life changing and it doesn't have to be that bad. Yes. There's some changes and we got to work through it, but it doesn't have to be that bad.
No, it does not. It does not at all. And it's fun for women who know that. Patients know that, right? They come to me and I'd say 50% of my patients are ready to dive all in. I don't even have a lot to teach them. You know, it's funny because they're so educated on this and they've been through multiple doctors and they're frustrated and they come in and like you, they know they deserve something, some relief, some treatment. And they've been reading Mary Claire Haber and her book, Menopause.
Right, Menopause. Here it is. If anyone needs
yes.
to see it. This is it.
That's the
my
one.
Bible. Yep. It's my Bible.
And there's a few others and it, yeah, these patients are so educated, but also stuck because where do you go get the care now that they feel they deserve and they do deserve?
Right, right. So tell us a little bit more. So in your medical, just so our listeners can understand this, because this was crazy when I learned this, like how much training do you have on menopause? Like what do they even teach you in medical school? I mean, you as a doctor, you're like, you didn't even know really what to do with yourself. So tell us a little bit about that.
I think that I've summarized it. Hormones cause breast cancer, and lowest dose for the least amount of time to manage their hot flashes. If you're going to give hormones, give the lowest dose for the least amount of time necessary to get their hot flashes under control. But it's better if you can give an antidepressant or gabapentin or an alternative medication. That's it. The end. I mean, it just happens. It's natural. You get hot flashes and then you're no longer fertile.
Right.
That literally is all I remember. And maybe there was more, but I don't know. I don't remember it. Anything I learned after medical school and residency was, I remember one talk I listened to back when I was doing family medicine where they talked about how safe vaginal estrogen was for even breast cancer survivors. And that was pretty cutting edge because that was years ago. And that's still up for debate in certain circles, but it's not. The science is pretty solid on that too. I did get some of that, but I had to seek out that education, you know, so I was able to treat my patients with vaginal estrogen, you know, so that helped that. It didn't help anything else, you know, that doesn't really affect the rest of the body, but that's about the extent of it until this past year.
Is that like low dose why they often just give you go back on birth control because that's the easy thing to kind of give them that low dose?
Yeah, it's first of all, birth control is easy, super common, tried and true, right? So you go low dose birth control, and that will help with symptoms for a lot of women. And so it's just something people are more comfortable with. And in fact, that's what I was put on when I was starting to have hot flashes and had some bad effects of that that weren't my doctor's fault. It was just, I didn't tell her about my history of migraines. I should have known better. But that was a patient I talked to pretty much that comes to my office has been offered maybe occasionally HRT, a little bit, very low doses, or a low dose birth control pill or an antidepressant. Like those are basically what they come to my office with. And that's just because it's safe. And also it's safe, but it's in general, but it's also very reliable and consistent, and you can expect it to work a certain way. A lot of women, they're still getting periods when they're perimenopausal. And so you put someone on estrogen patches and progesterone like I do for bioidentical hormones for perimenopause symptoms rather than a birth control pill, and you can get bleeding trouble. And so they can bleed more. They can have some pathway that's not so easy. And I definitely have to navigate that with certain patients. So a birth control pill is great, right? Because it stops your periods and you just can be very cyclical monthly and have a nice light period. You don't have to deal with the potential breakthrough bleeding or extra bleeding that might occur while you're adjusting to hormones, from HRT type hormones. So it's easier.
It's just crazy what's out there. And there's so many women I'm so excited that are more being more active and more, you know, coming forward and being like, okay, this doesn't have to be normal or this shouldn't be normal. So like any recommendations for women out there on, you know, how can they, is it ever too early or what, you know, when should they start talking about this? Because I think that's where some of us are just, you know what, we're busy. We have kids or we have jobs or we, you know, have aging parents. And so sometimes we're women, we power through it. We figure it out. We got to do it. We can't give up. So like when is too early to maybe start talking to your doctor or start researching it?
You know, once you start having symptoms, I've had 39-year-old women in my clinic who are having, they're just crazy, new for them, anxiety or irritability, maybe hot flashes, maybe insomnia, night sweats, body starting to get the beginning of symptoms that don't feel like themselves. Yet they may be cycling. They may be having a period regularly, but they're not feeling good. They're struggling. Some of them are saying, you know, I'm having a hard time doing my job. I feel like I'm forgetful. I feel like I'm getting ADHD. I can't remember things. I can't come up with words. Am I getting dementia? What's it? And these symptoms start happening younger and younger. Sometimes it depends on the patient, right? And it depends on when your mom went through menopause. It depends on factors that I can't figure out. But I have a lot of women in their early 40s really suffering with symptoms, but they're having periods that may not be getting irregular yet. So they're going to get they'll get told that this isn't, you know, there's nothing to do. And when they come to my office, I say, absolutely, that those are real. Those symptoms are real. You can start to have symptoms before your periods change. It happens. And I'm not at all going to dismiss somebody who comes in and says, yeah, I know I'm 41 years old, but these symptoms are really making my life hard. And in that case, you know, what may be going on when you look at, when you learn about how menopause happens in the body, there's stages of fertility. And the first sort of pre-perimenopausal stage is when your fertility wanes, goes down, but your periods haven't changed yet. And then the next stage is where your periods start to get closer together. And then the next stage is where they start to get further apart. And all of that can last for years until you finally have that last period. So you can start to have symptoms because you're not necessarily cycling or having normal estrogen, you know, estrogen, progesterone. So when women have their estrogen levels go up at the beginning of their period, then they ovulate, and then they get more of their progesterone phase, and then they don't get pregnant, all their hormones drop off and they get period. Well, that estrogen phase can be up and maybe they don't ovulate, their estrogen just keeps going. Things can just start to get wacky all over the place. So you can have hormones that are good, high, you're fine, and then next thing you know, they're low. And sometimes the first thing to go might be even progesterone. So you can't sleep. You're starting to get more anxious. And it's sort of that chaotic period that is often referred to by Dr. Heaver, where things are just all over the place. And your symptoms are real. What I ask my patients is, okay, all your life considered with these symptoms that brought you in, does this feel like you're handling this situation at work or at home or with your spouse or your kids differently than you would have 10 years ago? Do you feel like you are getting more anxious about what's going on or irritable than you would have 10 years ago? And when they say, yes, this is not me and I've not had this history, this has not been a problem, that to me is a sign this is something perimenopausal probably. It's happening. It's beginning. And in those cases, we can start estradiol, progesterone, and we're going to I warn them always at that point, yes, this is real. I will treat you. I will try to make you start to feel better. That's my goal. It might not be a straight shot to, great, thanks for the hormones. I'm all better. See you in a year. You know, let's start this. Let's follow up and see how you're doing in 2 months. Maybe that's it. Maybe we stop there and I see you in a year. But in the meantime, patients, one just messaged me yesterday or a couple of days ago and said, hey, I've had a period for a month now. I don't like that. And she's a little older, but we're going to need to evaluate that. We need to fix that. We need to make that feel better. So we're going to have to adjust things. And then in those cases, also, you maybe get an ultrasound. So things can be to look for a cause for bleeding, that why is she having bleeding? Did we just expose a fibroid that was sneaky, you know, hiding until we gave you hormones and mess with your system a little bit, which is what happens. So it's younger patients come in, I will treat them. And sometimes it's not a straight shot, but it's something that we will figure out together. And my goal is to get them relief. And I have yet to have a patient say, this is too much. I quit. I don't like it. They want to keep trying to figure it out. And so it's because they are starting to feel better. It's just, there's a little bit of a bumpy road sometimes.
And it's probably just so refreshing that, you know, I hear some of my friends say like, well, they're just kind of like, well, let's just try this. I don't know. It's just the kind of the way of life, right? And to your point, like maybe even the way you managed, you know, women coming in when you're younger and didn't really know, it kind of was, like you said, it was kind of taught, like, it's just kind of the way of life. And so I think we've kind of just been raised like that. So it's exciting. And I'm glad that there are more doctors like you that are going out and changing this conversation and changing this to be like, it doesn't have to be like, let's figure this out. It's not going to be easy, but let's figure it out.
Yeah. Yep. It's definitely, it takes work. It takes time. And that's why my appointments are long and getting longer next month, because I'm realizing I can't do it all in a 50-minute appointment. Especially if a patient has a history of any health problems, we need more time to talk through it all. It takes time, which is not what you can do with a conventional practice where you're seeing a patient every 20 minutes. There's just not enough time to do it well.
That is like mind-blowing. More than 50 minutes with a doctor? I've never even heard of such a thing.
I know, 65 minutes starting in April, because honestly, it's necessary. There's so many things to talk about, and it's education too, because either the patients come in and I don't need to educate them, but I need to educate them to some degree, make sure we are on the same page, because the science isn't solid on everything. There's some unknowns, there's some things that we have to say, well, here's what we know, here's where it's gray. you know, so that someone knows what they're signing up for if they sign up for hormones, which, you know, that's what you should do with every medicine, because all medicines have those gray areas, but it just takes time, and it's the only way to do it. It's how medicine used to be once upon a time, right? And so I'm doing it. I feel like I'm Doc Baker medicine, you know, from Little House on the Prairie.
I love it.
Menopause focus. A little different, but.
I love it. So you were talking a little bit about the National Society of Menopause and that you went through their course, and it was one of the hardest courses you've probably done in almost all your life. So can you tell us a little bit more, like, is that a spot that women could go to even start educating? Like, you know, we talked about the new menopause. Obviously, that is like, she's amazing, has so much information there. But, you know, tell us a little bit more about the American Menopause Society.
Yeah, the North American Menopause Society's goal is to get as much up-to-date evidence to the doctors that are seeking up-to-date current what's available evidence regarding menopause. And so anything that's evidence-based, they really stand on the evidence-based positions, which are that's a standard of care. They offer continuing education for me. For example, I can do little educational moments. They have there's tons of options out there. It's the place to go. And they're sort of up there. You know, there's also the British Menopause Society. There's other societies around the world that have position statements on menopause care, menopause after breast cancer, or menopause care after breast cancer. But, you know, all the things that are important. And if there's not evidence for it, they don't have a strong position on it. Their position will be that there's no evidence for something. And so there's, you know, the biggest problem with menopause, and many women know this that are paying attention to this issue, is that nobody's doing research right now. So a lot of the evidence that we have is being pulled out of maybe the Women's Health Initiative, which had some incorrect evidence published years ago. But we're sort of pulling, though, the good evidence out of that. And that's what they share and they teach and they educate on. And they also use things like information that would be more leaning towards some of the sexual medicine from the ISWISH, which is a sexual medicine for women specialty group that educates on that particular topic, which is where the guidelines that they provide for things like testosterone for women, which is really only indicated for low libido, and then other medications that can be used for, you know, sexual dysfunction, which is a big piece of menopause care. So they provide not only just specific menopause treatment recommendations as far as hormones go, but also as far as some sexual medicine issues go, and also alternatives to hormones for patients that aren't a great candidate for actual estrogen, progesterone type hormones. So they're the main resource to go to, but their course that they teach really goes back to the basics. It sort of reminds an old doctor of who's been in practice for so long, how does all this stuff work? Because you sort of get away from it. And so it was just a great foundational education. And then the whys of what they do, why we don't drop hormones for every patient that comes in, why we don't need to, why it doesn't change what we're going to do, except for testosterone. We'd have to test labs for testosterone. But it really gives you the background to build up for the whys and how does this all work, to help explain also when things don't go exactly as planned, which is what happens when I treat patients. Sometimes I always tell them, this is not a straight shot. We are going to have to do some trial and error, maybe. And it really helps me as a physician to actually understand why I'm doing what I'm doing, not just, thanks for showing up at my clinic, here's what we do. We, you know, in some clinics, they just test hormones, give you some pellets, and send you on your way, see you in 3 months. This is a much more in-depth form of menopause care. That's the only way I would do it.
Love that. I love that. So you talk about testing, like I'm hearing that. And I think about, you know, what do you test? Or, I mean, because hormones are just all over the board anyway for us, like you just said, whether you're in your cycle or out. So what are some good forms of testing out there to know or to use?
So there are tests out there. You can do the salivary tests that people do, and they're super expensive and they cover a whole bunch of things. And I have patients come in, they've spent their money on those tests, and I look at them and they have some nice information on there. It's just, it doesn't always affect what we do. When I have a patient come into my office, a lot of times they expect testing to be done. And based on the North American Menopause Society guidelines in general, I don't test, you know, I don't test a estradiol level. I don't test a progesterone level unless they really want it, Or unless I'm concerned that, for example, they've been on estradiol patches, for example, and it seems like their symptoms are not improving, or are they not absorbing? Because that can happen. So in that case, I'll test labs. But in general, unless somebody wants to know, am I in menopause? I just have to know. I can check an FSH and we should do it twice. So there are labs you can do, but I won't necessarily adjust my treatments based on your results. Unless, say, that you're one of the people who's wearing a patch and it's not working, we might need to switch to a different form of estradiol. But if we're going to start testosterone, which I do in a lot of women, we have to get a baseline because we don't want to go high on testosterone and cause side effects of that, which is not at all desirable. Nobody wants to grow facial hair, lose their hair, you know, male pattern baldness, things that we need to avoid. So we check labs for that. Specifically, and that's per the North American Menopause Society guidelines.
Very cool. Yeah, I know there's just some people that are very analytical and they need to know, am I in menopause or not? You know, and it's like, if you have symptoms, like, you know, the new menopause says, if you have symptoms, you're in perimenopause. So like, yeah. Yes. You don't need a test, you're there. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because I think that was my big thing as I came home and I was like, what is perimenopause? Because you hear about menopause, but now you're hearing a lot more conversations about perimenopause. So can you kind of tell us, like, what is the difference and what, like, how did it come about that menopause is this date?
Yeah, actually the 1 year, I would actually have to do some research to figure that out, because Why are you officially, you know, truly Before 1 year after your last menstrual period, you could check a couple FSH levels and they're going to be high probably. And then you're like, boom, you're in menopause. Didn't need to wait a year to prove that. But that's just a magic number that has been around for as long as I've been a doctor. Perimenopause is just the symptomatic phase before you get there. It's really most women that get a period, one of their first signs is going to be, hey, I missed a period, or, oh, gee, my periods are closer together now. So that's kind of the first sign. You may not even realize you're having any other symptoms. And what happens a lot, and this is even a personal story from my own experience, is you don't even know that things are happening until you get on hormones and go, I don't feel that anymore. Like, that's gone. I don't have to stretch to go to bed anymore. My hips don't hurt anymore. That's 6 months after I started hormones. It dawned on me that, oh my gosh, I thought that was just part of getting older. No, that's part of the musculoskeletal syndrome of menopause. So these things start happening that you don't realize are you think they're just old age. I was 47, come on, 45 probably when it started, that old age. Things start happening, you get more sore, it's harder to recover from a workout, for example, or your mind is not working quite as sharply. You know, these more subtle changes start to occur. And that's with your body having adequate estrogen one day, then 10 days later, not very much estrogen. And so your receptors, which are from literally brain to toe, you have estrogen receptors everywhere in your body. If those receptors are empty because you're just not making much estrogen right now, because you're in that part of your perimenopause ups and downs, you're in a down phase, brain suffers, your joints suffer, your heart can have palpitations, you start to get the hot flashes, the anxiety, the irritability, those are more of the brain type changes. Things start to happen that feel like, is this just aging? Am I losing my mind? Am I getting dementia or ADHD? Am I just getting old? And so those are some of the first signs. And if a woman doesn't get a period, say she's had a hysterectomy or an ablation, uterine ablation, those symptoms are what would tune you in to say, wait a minute, I think something's changing here. I don't feel like myself. And that's the phrase that is thrown around, I don't feel like myself. That's where you should start to scratch your head and wonder if this is perimenopause, even if you're late 30s, early 40s. I definitely am seeing it in patients that young.
Great. So the dying question I have is, you know, we have all these changes and we have this, maybe you go to HRT or you find a way to help your symptoms. Once you like get older, do those symptoms like kind of go away? So once you've hit that menopause again, that day and who knows wherever that is, do they go away or is this kind of the new normal and this is just kind of what's going to be your life?
So some of it is the new normal and some of it goes away. For many women, the hot flashes start to go away. There are some women that have hot flashes long into their 70s and forever. Things that don't go away are going to be the skin changes, the hot flashes, the vaginal changes that start to happen. Inevitably, at some point, women start to experience vaginal dryness and then vaginal atrophy, the very thinning of the vaginal walls that cause the urinary tract infections in my older patients, and even younger patients. But so those sorts of things, those are never going to get better. they're just going to progress, essentially. But the hot flashes are kind of the one that even women in their 50s, they might have had crazy hot flashes as they were going through perimenopause, but then they sort of get past that 1 year date and they start to notice, you know, my hot flashes aren't really bothering me anymore, but I can't sleep, or, you know, other symptoms are going on still. I've had some older patients in their 70s who have seen me. In general, I can't see patients at all because it's a Medicare complication, which is a different story for a different day, but I wish I could see all these women. But I saw them sort of as a favor to a friend, and they understood. It was a no data zone. We don't have any data on a 74-year-old woman going back on hormones, but she can't sleep. She feels terrible. She wants her hormones. She hasn't slept for 20 years. She used to sleep well on hormones. Please, can I go back on hormones? And I absolutely put her on hormones with the understanding, we don't know what the risks are in your age. And she said, I get it. I want hormones. I accept any risks. And so women, you know, like me, like Dr. Haver, we'll die with our patches on. We have no intention of ever going off of our hormones. And that's because they make you feel better. And so if you got to a point in your life where you're like, I'm kind of done with being on any sort of medication at all, you could go off. Well, maybe it won't make it a difference. But things like osteoporosis, for example, which is invisible and is happening, whether you notice it or not, not to all women, but to many women, if you're on estrogen and you go off of estrogen and it was benefiting your bones, which it does have, it's the best osteoporosis medication, especially for prevention. If you go off of it, you basically immediately lose all benefits of the estrogen for your bone health. So again, thank you. I'll stay on my estrogen patch.
Yes. I think we could have a whole episode. And I know, I mean, her chapter's on that too. I mean, it is crazy how you doctors can figure out, you know, how all that is, because it does. It helps so many things. But what I'm hearing you say is, I'm just going to tell my kids this is forever my memory. Like, I'm just going to forever kind of be forgetful is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. 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 Yes.
Yesterday, my conversation was, do you think I asked twice just to be a jerk? No, I really don't remember. So just answer the question again, because I don't remember the answer.
Yeah. Yep. And those things are like, that is why women come to my office and they have Googled, am I getting dementia?
Yes.
And I'm like, no, I don't think so. Probably not. Let's see if hormones help. And they inevitably do.
Yes. I've seen a huge difference. But there's still some days that I'm just, no, I swear you did not tell me that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's not 100%. So I definitely feel like I could be sharper. But I also work nights. So maybe it's partly that. You know, I can't blame it all on menopause. I probably have to blame some of it on my lifestyle.
So. Right. Right. So I think one other quick thing is, what's your hope for future menopause care then? Like, I just love that, like, literally within 6 months, you had this idea, you had this dream, you did it, and you're doing it. You know, what is your, like, future? Like, what would you hope if you could tell women or other, you know, medical professionals out there? Like, what is your hope for menopause?
Women to be able to go into any, whether it's an OBGYN or primary care doctor, and say, hey, this feels like menopause and having menopausal symptoms, and have the doctor feel comfortable just to put them on estrogen and progesterone at a minimum. You know, so many doctors are scared too, and it's nothing against them. I was too. Things like estrogen and the fear, does it cause breast cancer? Oh gosh, you have factor V lighting deficiency, which is a potential risk for blood clots. You can't go on estrogen. That's not true with the estrogen patches. You know, I want doctors to have a basic, solid education about what's safe, that basically, with almost no exception, every patient can go on vaginal estrogen. Every woman should be able to be on vaginal estrogen. I don't care if she's 90 or if she's 45 having dryness and she has breast cancer. She can go on vaginal estrogen. I would like just that basic knowledge and comfort for all doctors, so patients can go there and at least get the basic starter pack of estrogen, progesterone. If they have a uterus, they need progesterone. No uterus, maybe they don't want progesterone. Some people still like it, but you don't need it. It would be my personal dream, because this is where my patients are frustrated. They're coming to me and they've gone to menopause specialists who said, you're not having symptoms that are consistent with menopause. You can have a birth control pill or an anti-anxiety medication. And they just want to scream. They're so frustrated. So I want that to be a basic knowledge for just any doctor that's going to see a menopausal, perimenopausal woman.
One other question I have is, you know, we want this, you know, podcast to also be be there for family members or supporting other women, because maybe you're not experiencing it, but you're kind of getting ready or you want to help your friends or family. You know, what's something you would tell like a husband? Like, I just think of, you know, married couples, like they're trying to figure this out. Their husbands don't know a whole lot. Like anything there, any support that you know for families?
As far as for men to be supportive, you know, for one thing, what women are most concerned about when they come to me is their absolute loss of libido. They have no interest and they see how that's affecting their marriage. That is a huge concern. And so just right there saying, letting the man know that their spouse know or partner that this is a big deal. And part of getting her feeling better is to help her also find that libido again. Just right there, you're going to get his attention. The other piece is menopause. The best way a man could understand it is if somehow he could get his head around, what if you lost all of your testosterone? What if it was taken away from you? When men go on Lupron, which basically blocks their testosterone for treatment of, say, prostate cancer, they feel tired, they feel run down, they have no libido, they just feel blah and not great, you know, mood is low. That is what menopause is like for women. You know, just try to understand that we just lost our estrogen. You don't lose your testosterone. Most men just get to keep it for the duration. Women just have to live without estrogen, which is their female equivalent. And so somehow helping them understand, they can read the books if they want to be really supportive or listen to a podcast. Grab a podcast and listen to 40 minutes with Dr. Heber talking about what's happening to women. Or even one of my very favorites is Dr. Evan Blooming, who is a co-author of Estrogen Matters. He's a man, and he watched his wife go through menopause after breast cancer, and he is just brilliant and so insightful. Or there's a Peter Attia website with Dr. Evan Blooming that I listened to recently and my mind was blown listening to that. I learned even more. So whatever way that they will listen to something just to get even just some education, they want their wife back. If she doesn't feel like herself, everybody at home will be happier if mom feels better. And yeah, that goes for the kids too. And so being supportive if she's seeking out care and helping her get there and being patient is it's easier if he understands some of that.
And I just love that we're able to talk about it, right? Like, I see so much more with my kids now that I've been, you know, it's been almost a year now, Sarah and I have been talking about auntie. So my kids have been talking about it. And I love that you say that. It's like talking to them and telling them and explaining it. You know, mine have now not been like, probably even kind of worried. Okay, mom isn't going crazy. We're not worried. She's not, you know, like, this is normal. She's working on it. And be patient and help her, you know, be like, you've noticed a change in better, or mom, you're getting, you know, we kind of say, mom, you're getting crazy again. I'm like, okay, check. Did I change out my estrogen batch or not?
Yeah, right.
Am I on my meds? So I love that. I love that. And I love that we're talking about it more. And there are resources out there for everyone just to listen and even just understand what we're going through.
Yeah. It's funny story. My son, who's 21, his aunt contacted me about my clinic, and she was like, yeah, Mason was with us for dinner and he mentioned your clinic and somehow hot flashes came up. And she's like, I can't even believe that hot flashes are a normal part of your 21-year-old son's conversation. But that is normal conversation in my household, menopause and hot flashes and all of the above. And even my son, it just was funny because you don't realize how much they're taking in too.
Yes.
But it is, it does become just regular conversation. It becomes acceptable. And that makes it much easier if they understand as much as they possibly can. Yep. Age appropriate.
Yep. Because I think about that, you know, we talk about when pregnant women, right? Like you talk about even in the workplace, yes. Like, yep, she's got placenta brain, or, you know, that's what I always called it, or, you know,
yeah.
Like whatever. And so I hope that menopause starts coming that way too. And women aren't ashamed of it because everyone's going through it. And I think it's just hard because everyone's at a different time in a different place with it.
Yeah. Thank God for social media. You know, rarely will I ever say that, but I mean, that is how women know so much. And the minute you look up something menopause, you're your feed is full. It's been educational even for me. I learn things. I find new people to follow that are teaching good stuff out there. And I have blog posts about who to follow. And that's based on what I'm seeing. And I thank God women just know so much now. They're so educated. They're poor doctors that can't keep up, you know, and that's not their fault. It's just a lot of information and they're consuming it like crazy. And it's fun when a patient comes to my office and she just knows so many things. It's just a fun visit because she's so excited to be here and knows she's going to start to get some symptom relief.
Do you have any recommendations or anything about sexual? We talked about the sexual wellness and how that changes. Do you have any recommendations or thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's a physician, urologist, sexual medicine specialist, Kelly Casperson. She has a You Are Not Broken podcast, which is all about menopause and sexual medicine. She's a big testosterone educator and advocate, and I follow her and learn a ton from her. And so I think people really enjoy learning off of her podcast as well. But she's on social media. She's on Instagram. And so I recommend her. She's fun too.
So thank you. That's a, for sure go and link her in this. So
I can't thank you enough for spending time with us and sharing with our audience what you know, and that there's resources out there and there's people like you that exist who want to spend more than a couple minutes with us talking through our histories and our problems. Like, thank you, thank you, thank you. We need more women like you who see a need and go out and get it.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's been fun to be here. It's fun to talk about it. I talk about it all the time. I love it. So this was great. Thanks for having me.
If you want to learn more about Dr. Waymire and what she's doing at Dragonfly Menopause Care, please go to her website, dragonflymenopausecare.com.
And if you love this episode, please do us a favor, rate, review, follow us, and honestly share this. Share this with your family and friends or even on your social media, because we all deserve a better life and a better choices.
And if you have questions or if there are topics you want us to cover, please reach out to us on social media at Auntie and the Pause.
Until next time, just remember, you're not alone and you're definitely not crazy.